in Kent County versus Farmers Fairness. Are you ready to proceed? Good afternoon, Mr. Shannon.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. May it please the court. Scott Shannon here today on behalf of the Kent County government, the Kent County Levy Court, and its honorable commissioners. We are here on the Levy Court's appeal from a decision of the Court of Chancery invalidating Kent County Ordinance 0602, which established a coastal zone protection overlay district. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
The yellow light will come on at 5 minutes, so you can continue talking, but you will be using your reserve time.
Thank you, Your Honor. The issues presented for the court today all pertain to statutory construction, which this court reviews de novo. On December 20th, 2005, when the Coastal Zone Overlay Ordinance was introduced by the Levy Court, the procedure used to notice its consideration, public hearing, and ultimate enactment was that mandated by 9 Delaware Code, Section 4911, for changes in zoning district, planner regulations, and procedure. Section 4911 allows that the county government may, from time to time, make amendments, supplements, changes, or modifications with respect to the number, shape, or boundary of any district or districts, or any regulation of or within such district or districts, or any other provision of the zoning regulation or regulations, but that they must first be referred to the Zoning Commission under the code, which allows for the creation of the Regional Planning Commission, which is now in effect. As required by Section 4911, the county referred the ordinance to the Regional Planning Commission, which referred to as the RPC, and notification of the RPC's public hearing was published 15 days prior to, as required by Section 4911. The RPC held its public hearing. It recommended a levy court adopt the Coastal Zone Overlay Ordinance, referred it to the levy court for action. The levy court then noticed by publication its public hearing for 15 days under 4911, held its public hearing, and ultimately voted to adopt the Coastal Zone Overlay Protection District. As enacted, the Coastal Zone Overlay does not change the maximum density, which is stated for the underlying properties which are affected, which are those which are zoned AR, agricultural, residential, and AC, agricultural conservation, under the Kent County Zoning Code. That maximum density is stated within the Kent County Code, sections 205.44 for the AC district and 205.65 for the AR district, both of which state maximum zoning density is one dwelling unit for each 10 acres. That is the same under the zoning regulations and under the coastal zone. Nor does the ordinance change the uses to which the zoned properties may be put. What the ordinance does is it imposes additional regulations governing the utilization and development that may occur within those properties.
Can I interrupt? As I understood the trial court's decision, it was that, in part, one of the problems was that this does not, by its terms, change the maximum density, but by operation it does. Is that correct, or have I misunderstood?
There is a provision, Your Honor, within the zoning classifications under both the AR and the AC. And because the language is corollary, if I may, I'll refer to the AC, which contemplates village development. And village development is exactly what it states, which is an allowance for the utilization and development of AR and AC zone properties. And under the coastal zone regulatory scheme, an individual owning AR or AC zone lands would not have the option to have a village development of their property.
But again, which would change the level of density that they could develop their property to, correct?
Under utilization and development regulation, that is correct, Your Honor.
Well, the Chancery seemed to focus on lack of uniformity. Where did it go wrong in doing that?
as I read the Court of Chancery's decision, if the regular viewed from the bottom up, and you start with the premise that you have an AR zone property, and then your next layer up is that it is a coastal zone regulated AR property, then arguably there would be a density or a uniformity violation under 4902B. But these are regulations just as they're described and as the General Assembly recognizes, they are overlay regulations. And if the perspective is from the top down to determine what regulatory scheme is being imposed, then what we have is a designated coastal zone area with one set of regulations overlying the AR and AC zone properties subject to those regulations. From the top down, there is no uniformity violation because all of those properties within the coastal zone are treated the same. And when you go west of Route 1 and you look from the top down, you're not looking through an overlay of coastal zone regulations. You're looking directly at AR and AC zone properties. Now, had the character and use provisions of the AR and AC zone properties been changed, and if I may read, the character and use is engrossed within the code itself. So, for example, the AC zoning describes specifically the purpose of the AC agricultural is to provide for a wide range of agricultural use and farm-related services while providing for low resident density residential development. Again, the distinction occurs throughout both the statutes and the code in areas that are rural in character. So agricultural use in areas that are rural in character. That character and use is a recurring theme, not only within the General Assembly's grant of authority under Title IX, Chapter 49, but also within the code itself, the zoning code. And the distinction that is made, again, can be seen in the code, for example, the references to village development.
But why didn't the county, for example, just do this overlay on the other side of Route 1?
I don't know, and respectfully, I don't know that I can answer the question again. I don't know why they did not. The decisions that they made not to, I'm not sure. What I am certain of, and one of the positions that we have argued, is that the state, through its own Coastal Zone Act, Title VII, Chapter 70, has declared the coastal zone, which it defined as east of Route 9 at that time, to be a critical area for the future quality of life of the citizens of the state, a critical area. In this court, in the City of Wilmington versus Parcel of Land matter, found that the legislature's sweeping declaration of policy was entitled to a liberal interpretation to give the State Coastal Zone Act effect so that there would be protection of the Coastal Zone Act and the coastal zone area and natural resources. Under Title VII, Chapter 75, an argument which Chancery Court rejected, 7508B provides that the counties use their zoning authority to protect any natural resource or feature governed by this title, Title VII. So the designation of the coastal zone as being a critical area entitled to these types of protections should not be in dispute. The state has declared it. The Supreme Court has blessed that. It is Chapter 70 within Title VII. It is an area, a natural area or resource governed by Title VII, and Section 7508B directs the counties specifically to use their zoning authority to protect those features or areas or resources that are governed by Title VII. That's what the county chose to do here. Honestly, Your Honor, I don't know why they didn't extend it west of Route 1, but I don't know that is determinative.
Well, I asked the question in light of the Court of Chancery's opinion, which seemed to say, in the Chancellor's view, you can accomplish this, but you need to do it on a more broad-based level in order to achieve uniformity.
I, We believe that that is an option. And I'm not saying the levy court won't exercise that option. But the levy court has designated a growth zone area along, I believe, 2 miles on either side of Route 13 and Route 1.
And I don't want to digress on that, but come back to your other point, which is top down, bottom up. What do you rely on to support your top down construction as opposed to the chancellor's bottom up?
The language of Title VII, Section 75027, in which overlay zones are described as local zoning districts, which provide additional regulatory protections. And then that language is echoed in Section 7508A, in which the overlay zones, which are directed, mandated in 7508A for the counties to adopt to protect designated state resource areas, are specifically stated that they shall overlie and not replace the underlying zoning classification.
But the ordinance here is much broader than any area designated by the Delaware Open Space Council or the Secretary, isn't it?
Well, Your Honor, there's 7508A mandates that the counties adopt overlay zones to protect areas designated by the Open Space Council or as recommended by the Open Space Council, the state resource areas. If that is all that is required, then there is no purpose for Section 7508B, which is a separate grant. It makes no reference to state resource areas, and instead it is much broader and directs that the counties, using their powers granted under Title IX, shall adopt overlay zones and state minimum densities and impervious cover and performance standards. In other words, there's no need for 7508B if all that is contemplated is that the counties will protect Open Space Council designated state resource areas. And a reading of those two sections, and they complement each other. 7508A says you shall do this when the State Resource Council acts. 7508B says using your powers, otherwise you may adopt these additional overlay zoning to protect these areas. And, in fact, it goes further and says that the performance standards described in subsection A are not what we're talking about here. When they describe densities and limitations on impervious cover and the other protections that are recommended that the county adopt through overlay zoning. And, in fact, 7508B goes further and gives the counties the option of giving alternative means of achieving the goals to the landowners where appropriate. Where appropriate. So if the counties decide to give the landowner the option of meeting the standards or complying with overlay zoning regulations, 7508B gives the counties that discretion.
Does the legislative history support that argument?
Yeah, I believe the legislative history, as codified within Title VII, does support that. As an example, again, with reference to the Coastal Zone Overlay Act, there's a provision in the overlay ordinance, that regulates lighting. Well, under Title VII, Chapter 71A, outdoor lighting is regulated, and that's a feature that's regulated under Title VII. The reference to critical areas is found within the Wetlands Preservation Act, which I believe is Chapter 63. The Source Water Protection Act, I believe, is Chapter 60. In other words, there are repeated references that the General Assembly has found that the protection of these natural resources is critical is a word that comes up more than once in the statements of policy as to these individual acts that are compiled within Title VII. And the intent of the legislature to allow the counties to have this flexibility to adopt overlay zoning, to designate these areas for protection through additional regulations. Can I give Your Honor copies of the transcripts of the debates. I can't. But the General Assembly is presumed to be aware of other laws when it enacts them, and certainly it has taken a progressive series of steps to strengthen the county's ability to adopt these types of measures through a series of enactments, I believe, beginning with the State Coastal Zone Act and then up through, I believe, Chapter 75 is the most recent.
You want to reserve the rest of your time?
I would like to reserve the rest of my time, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Manning, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm William Manning. I'm with the firm of Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney, and I represent Farmers for Fairness and the other individual plaintiffs in this action. With me at council table is my partner, Richard Forston. Your Honor, I think it's fair to say, I don't think we'd get any disagreement from my friend, Mr. Shannon, that the centerpiece of the county's argument is that 7508B grants some independent authority, independent from 7508A, independent authority for the county to do what it did here. This is a brand new argument. This argument wasn't made below. In fact, when the chancellor decided in his first decision, based on issues not even discussed, that the ordinance violated the uniformity requirement of state law, the county asked for re-argument and unveiled for the first time any argument based on Chapter 75 of Title 7, chiding the court for failing to consider whether Chapter 75 granted the county the authority to do what it did, in spite of the uniformity requirement. The chancellor, in disposing of that motion for re-argument, denied the motion and saying that any such oversight, in other words, that my failure to consider Chapter 75 of Title 7 might be explained by the defendant's utter failure to raise the issues in their brief or at oral argument. I've just quoted from the court's second opinion in that case in the opinion issued in rejecting the motion for re-argument. The chancellor, in order to reassure his audience that his rejection of the motion for re-argument was also correct on the merits, pointed out that the ordinance, that the overlay ordinance, the challenged ordinance, could not be that which was contemplated by Chapter 75. He pointed to the fact that this ordinance preceded the maps, which were the trigger under Chapter 75 for county and or local action in order to preserve state resource areas. In other words, this ordinance was passed before the triggering event contemplated by state law. This overlay zone doesn't identify any of the state resource areas protected by the state map that triggers this county or municipal action. And so the court says, I'm rejecting this argument. It's untimely. I never heard it before. And, oh, by the way, I think it's wrong. Here, the argument on appeal is the court once again failed to consider something. This time, the county says, the court failed to consider the fact that 7508B is a different grant of authority independent from 7508A. In other words, the county says, we'll concede that the chancellor was correct, that 7508A is not a grant of authority for this overlay ordinance, but he missed the boat. He didn't consider 7508B, and yet that argument was never made to the court below. This court has just changed its rules. You recently amended your Rule 14B6, and you now tell appellants, tell me where in the record below by a, and these are your words, the rule words, clear and exact reference, where you made this argument to the court below. The county hasn't done that. The county couldn't do that because that was not made. That argument was never made to the court below.
Even on re-argument?
No, sir. On re-argument, the argument was just 75 generally, and the chancellor looked at 7508A, which is where he saw the only opportunity for an overlay zone, and said, this can't be that. And now we hear something that we never heard even on re-argument, that no, it's not 7508A, it's 7508B. These arguments, in other words, that we're hearing about 7508B, I'm hearing for the first time on appeal to this court. I think in order to do that, and because the county can't tell you where in the arguments below, in the court below, this argument was made, that alone justifies an affirmance. If you want to depart from your rule, by the way, you make provisions for it. If I can show you that the interests of justice require that I be given leave to depart from the requirements of both Rules 8 and 14, in this case they work together, I can make that argument. There's no such argument in the county's briefs or in the argument I just heard from my friend Mr. Shannon. So this entire appeal can be rejected as new and not that which was argued to the court below. You can also reject it on the merits. Mr. Shannon just parsed for you a little bit 7508B. 7508B says as follows. We've got some interests that we want to protect. I'm not going to quarrel right now with his notion that it's an independent and different grant of authority than 7508A because it doesn't matter. I don't think it's correct, but I'll concede the point for the purpose of this argument. When you're doing and protecting that which 7508B wants you protect, you do it, and I'm reading here, by means of enactment and enforcement of specific technically based environmental performance standards, design criteria, and mitigation requirements. I don't know what those things are, and it doesn't matter for purposes of this argument. But the statute tells us what they aren't. Minimum lot sizes, density limitations, which is exactly what we have here, shall not constitute performance standards unless the county adopts them as an alternative means of complying with the purpose and requirements of the overlay zones. And in that case, I'm reading from the statute, it shall be the option of the owner of land to develop according to the density limitations which are offered by the county as an alternative to the specific performance standards, design criteria, and mitigation requirements that are supposed to serve the objectives. In other words, 7508B tells you what the objectives are. It's to protect some natural resources. Then says you must do so. The county must do so by specific criteria, specific technically based environmental performance standards, design criteria, and mitigation requirements. You may, as an alternative, achieve these purposes through the use of techniques like density limitations, which is what is going on here. But if you do that, you have to give the landowner the option of which to comply with, your performance standards or these density limitations. That is not how this overlay ordinance, this challenged ordinance, is constructed. My point is the challenged ordinance bears no resemblance to that which is permitted by 7508B. So in addition to these being new arguments never made to the court below, either in briefs at oral argument or on re-argument, it is also an incorrect argument.
And as you know, the chancellor focused on the lack of uniformity. How do you respond to Mr. Shannon's top-down, bottom-up analogy today?
Your Honor, I see no provision in the statute or anywhere else in Delaware law that permits the I'm not even sure that the distinction he draws is an appropriate distinction, but I sure don't see it authorized anywhere. In other words, his proposition has no authority for it. Instead, you look at what state and, in this case, county law tells you are the kinds of things about which there must be uniformity. You look to see whether that happens. It's easy to determine that there is AR property in Kent County that is treated differently than other AR property in Kent County. There's really no dispute about that. There's no relief. There's no statutory provision that gives you the parameters that Mr. Shannon mentioned decide whether there's uniformity based on top-down or bottom-up. So my answer to Your Honor is, first of all, I don't know what that means, and secondly, I don't see any authority for it anywhere in state law.
Well, the Chancellor said overlay zoning is okay, didn't he?
It is. This is a case that quarrels with the lack of notice. You can do what Kent County wanted to do, but you have to give notice. In other words, Kent County could have created the very same overlay district that it did create, acknowledged the fact that it was changing the zoning of those properties within that zone, comply with the notice requirements that apply when you are changing the zoning for a certain, and create a new district. Call it the Coastal AR District. It doesn't matter. You can do it.
But that involves a letter to everybody who lives within that overlay and those who adjoin it? Is that
close. It requires a letter to all those who adjoin and posting on each property within. And Kent County did nothing of the sort. So this is not a challenge to Kent County's ability to create overlays. Indeed, we don't quarrel with the proposition that overlays are authorized and urged by state law. But nowhere does it say, and when you're doing this, you can ignore all the other requirements that we've imposed on you, county, or municipality. And those requirements are, within a zoning district, everybody has to be treated the same. That didn't happen here. The court so held, and I don't even hear that really challenged on appeal. And if you do decide to treat some people differently, what you've done is create a new zoning classification. You're perfectly entitled to do that, but you have to give notice.
Well, let me understand the process of change. If the county wanted to do a comprehensive, entire new ordinance for the entire county, they don't have to post on every property, do they?
Well, I assume that your comprehensive new zoning doesn't have the effect of treating some properties with differently than other properties within the same zoning classification, so that I'm going to assume your hypothetical doesn't violate the uniformity requirement. If it does, I would say that it requires the notice.
The hypothetical I'm posing contemplates an entire new ordinance. Repealing the old ordinance, imposing an entire new regime.
Yes, it requires notice.
Well, I'm sure it requires notice. Does it require posting on every individual property in the county?
Yes. Sure.
And the statute requiring that is...
Well, I'm not sure which. It would be difficult to tell in Your Honor's hypothetical whether a property was an adjoining property, which is entitled to notice by mail, or a property within the new zone, which must be posted. If you're just redoing the whole code, I don't know what the answer would be, but I do know that everybody would be entitled to some sort of notice, and I would leave it to the facts of the case to sort out whether it was a posting or a mailing. But my answer to Your Honor's question is yes. Not a difficult thing to do. The county manages to find you. If the county thinks that you own a particular property and you haven't paid your taxes, the county has no difficulty mailing you notice of your deficiency. There's no reason why that same bulk mailing that the county can do, that same database that the county uses to tell you if you haven't paid your property tax bill can't be used to tell you that the county is about to change dramatically the conditions of use of your property.
All right.
The court decided below two things. The uniformity requirement was violated, and also decided in its second opinion, the opinion rendered in response to the motion for re-argument, that the notice required by county law that you and I have just discussed, Your Honor, was not given. This argument hasn't been met on appeal. there's a sentence in the answer in the opening brief that says that decision by the chancellor, and this is the only reference to that decision, was an absurd and unworkable result that cannot withstand scrutiny. The county doesn't tell us why it's absurd, why it's unworkable, and why it won't withstand scrutiny. There is no mention. I don't think you find the word notice in the reply brief. And so that argument, that decision by the chancellor that the notice requirements have been violated, the county has waived its right to challenge that here because it simply hasn't made the argument.
Well, the chancellor referred to one individual. I'm not sure how to pronounce her last name.
Mrs. Lebkecker.
But that's what you're referring to in denying the motion.
The chancellor concluded that there was at least one plaintiff that had standing to complain about the lack of notice, and because of that, the ordinance was defective because of its lack of notice. He didn't reach the question whether those plaintiffs who had shown up and watched the hearings had waived notice requirements. He didn't have to because of Mrs. Lebkecker. So he concluded that the notice provisions required by state and county law had been violated, and we don't hear any response to that on appeal. I think the county has waived that argument, and I think for another reason, that's another reason why summary affirmance can be given in this case.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I trust the court will want me to briefly address the procedural issues.
You can use your time any way you wish.
On whether the issues were raised below, we filed a motion for re-argument in paragraph 8, of which we address 7508A. And in paragraph 9, we argue the legislature's grant of authority is designed and intended to supplement the county's zoning regulatory authority. And we cite to 7508B. Those arguments were in the nature of seeking re-argument, which the chancellor denied before turning to the substance of the arguments themselves. So his letter decision of May 25th is not merely a denial of the motion for re-argument in which these issues were in fact raised, but it also goes to the substance. And the reason we sought re-argument, the approach all along has been that the county possesses the authority to enact overlay zoning.
And what kind of notice needs to be given?
Well, Your Honor, if the court rules substantively in the county's favor that the overlay zone ordinance is a regulatory change, then the question about the notice that is required is answered. Because the notice required for a regulatory change is that which was given publication 15 days prior to under 4911. Only in the event of a zoning change is the individual mailed notice, which the appellees are arguing for and which the chancellor found was required under 4926, that's only reached if it is found to be a zoning change. And our argument all along is that this was not a zoning change. This was an amendment to zoning regulations. It was a supplementation of zoning regulations. So by default, should this court accept the county's argument, then the only notice that's required is that mandated by 4911. The two arguments go hand in hand. If I may read from the court's, Chancery Court's May 1st opinion, and again, the only issues under consideration at that time were Title IX, Chapter 49. The chancellor stated, reading the statutes as an integrated whole, no reason appears why the court should not conclude that Kent County cannot, A, divide its territory into both zones and districts, and, B, overlay a zone atop a district. Nothing in the legislative structure suggests that Kent County is forced to choose between the two schemes. And he goes on to say that, in short, nothing forbids Kent County from using overlay zones or overlay districts. We agree with all of that. That sentence concludes, however, so long as the latter, overlay districts, meets the substantive and procedural requirements placed upon districts. And this gets to where we see the real issue with the chancellor's decision and why appeal was sought. Nowhere within the statutory scheme, or indeed within the county code itself, is the operative functional distinction between a zone and a district upon which the chancellor's decision depends, absolutely depends. He makes this distinction, hard and fast, strict literal distinction between zones and districts, and it is upon that distinction that he decides Kent County has divided itself into districts. And because this ordinance is characterized as a coastal zone overlay protection district, it must fail. In other words, had this been called a coastal zone ordinance or a coastal zone overlay protection ordinance, and the word district was not present under the chancellor's decision, we would not be here today, and it would have been upheld as valid.
Well, wait a second.
I'm sorry?
Confused. If that had happened, then wouldn't you have had to require? Wouldn't you have had to follow the procedure of 4926, which you didn't?
Respectfully, Your Honor, what the chancellor found was that because this was a district change, it changed the underlying AC and AR zoning classification, because he found it was a district change, not a zone change.
But if it had been a zone change, wouldn't you have had to comply with 4926?
Not according to the chancellor's May 1st opinion, Your Honor. He only said that because it was an overlay district, because it was called a district, not a zone.
And it's your position that if it were a zoning, you would not have to comply with 4926?
If I may finish my...
Sure.
It's more refined than that, Your Honor. If it's a regulatory change that does not alter the character or use of the district, then the notice that is required is that set forth by 4911, which is 15 days published. If it is a zoning change in which the character or use of the district is being revised, The easiest example is if it was to go from an AR agricultural residential to an industrial, as an example. That is a change in the uses to which the property may be put, its character and use. And that would require the notice required by 4926.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate the court's time and attention.
Thank you for your arguments. The court will take this matter under advisement, and we will adjourn.
Please rise.